Off the ball.
Oh my God, outrageous. But like, we were quietly confident coming into the game, like, you know, so I'm not too surprised that we won.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
Hello all and welcome back to another episode of The Green Scene on Off the Ball with myself, Matthew Brennan, Ben Symes to my right, David Wilson to my left, your one-stop shop for all things Irish football. The Green Scene on Off the Ball is with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. We're going to be joined by Hearts, I was going to say defender. I don't want to undersell the man. He's played a bit in midfield. He's quite versatile. Oisín McEntee in a tight race at the minute, lads. I'd say we're fairly excited to get chatting to Oisín in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, it's a big one. Hearts and Hibs this Sunday at Easter Road. Huge derby game.
That's tasty.
And it's an unbelievable opportunity for Hearts to win their first league title since 1960. And what a story for football, I think, in general.
Absolutely.
If Hearts did manage to get over the line. But really interesting to see. And we've been saying it all season here as well. We've been chatting about how interesting the Scottish Premiership title race has been all year. So
refreshing.
Yeah.
Very refreshing. And we'll get into all of that with Oisín in a couple of minutes' time. But there's one man who has been stealing the headlines over the course of the last, 12 months and even longer on the Irish side of things. Troy Parrott picking up his first major title, we'll call it, in senior men's football. For AZ Alkmaar at the weekend, a very convincing 5-1 victory over NEC Nijmegen. He's stealing the headlines once again. Unbelievable stuff. He got the last goal. He couldn't help but get himself on the score sheet once again.
I don't know whether I'm ashamed or proud to admit that I was maybe flicking back and forth between Manchester City versus Arsenal and this game on ESPN Netherlands.
The objections you have
through all legal sources. Nijmegen played this just absolutely bizarre style of football where I think David touched on a brief the other week where you just pass it and run forward. That is literally what they do.
Yeah,
I'd only seen highlights of them. I hadn't seen the full thing. And then I ended up going on deep diving Sunday evening into their coach and the backstory. But it was just brilliant to see Parrott get a trophy off the line after the disappointment last year in the Dutch Cup final, obviously, where he ended up going off, I think, when it was still level. It was just brilliant to see him get over the line. He got a little nice assist as well for Coop Miner's goal. Keith Smith, well, what a player. Oh my, that AZ team. There's a couple of players, Vuto Ghost as well, who's going to be gone in the summer. And already PSV and Feyenoord are sniffing around him. But it's like a golden generation for AZ at the moment, and it's spearheaded by Troy. Just delighted to see him get a trophy over the line as well before he moves on in summer, you know?
Yeah, from some of the stuff we've seen from Lolly AZ fans just around the game, there's an acceptance that he probably is going to be on the move this summer, and they're happy enough with what he's contributed for their club over the course of the last couple of years. If that move is to come to fruition, or a move is to come to fruition, it seems like something that we touch on or gloss over every week as to where we would like to see him go. But what are we thinking?
Yeah, I don't know. Because he's won this cup, he's scored quite a number of goals now in Europe as well, in European competitions. He has been a mainstay and a big part of this AZ team who finished in the, let's say, top four, top five the last couple of seasons of the Eredivisie. He is going to be quite an expensive player for teams to have a look at. So that probably kind of narrows down or kind of will determine where he will finish up maybe in the summer. I know there's links with PSV and links in Germany too, but I think it looks like Italy will be his final destination, I suppose, this summer. I'm not sure if I love that move, but there's a big opportunity for him there to go to, I think, AC Milan and to be their striker. But if you looked at AC Milan's team last week, they had played a 3-5-2 and a front two of Rafael Leao and Christian Pulisic, Nicholas Fulkrug on the bench. Like, it's an easy place to get lost. Santi Jimenez went there, obviously, who played really, really well in the Netherlands with Feyenoord, and it hasn't really worked out for him there either. So hopefully Troy is the man to kind of do it over there.
Jean-Philippe Mateta looks like he's going to become, AC Milan are going to be coming back him for him. I think they're going to bid 20 million this summer. So there's another player he's going to be competing with up top. It's an interesting move if it happens.
It's one of those, I feel like he's going to be part of a few dominoes falling, a trickle down effect of a few different strikers moving about, and we'll see where he ends up.
I think physically, I think he's developed his game another level this year again. He looks like a man amongst boys sometimes out there, even just the way he kind of holds off the central defenders. And
yeah, there's a lot of maturity to his game.
Yeah, like I think he obviously gone up another level, and the big question is, like, can he go up another level again for during the summer? So that's hopefully, like, he's proved everybody wrong. He's any doubters that he's had, he's conquered them. So it's a big opportunity again for him.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, a man who played alongside Troy Parrott at one point in time is Hearts. I'm going to repeat myself what I said a few minutes ago. I don't want to call him a defender because it's underselling what he is. But Oisín McEntee, welcome to the Green Scene. How are you?
I'm good, lads. How are we? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, not a problem at all. Not a problem at all. Things are going pretty well for you over there playing with Hearts at the minute.
Yeah, it's a good time to be at Hearts and I'm enjoying it. It's been really good since I came.
Yeah, and you have a big one to look forward to at the weekend, taking on Hibs. I mean, everyone knows how big of a game that is over in Scotland, and it definitely transcends across over to here too.
Yeah, listen, it's a huge game in the city. There's the two teams and it's going to be a big one on the weekend.
Yeah, and you've obviously made the step up. You were playing with Walsall last year in League Two and you've got to move over now to Hearts. How have you found that step up, I suppose, from playing at that level in England over to being right up the top of the Premiership in Scotland?
I think it was a bit unknown for me when I was leaving League Two. I didn't know if it was going to be too big of a jump or what my role was going to be going into Hearts. But I kind of, a bit cliche, took it step by step in terms of coming into pre-season and seeing what the standard was like. And I kind of got into the team early and stayed in it because we were winning. And that's kind of how I've approached it all year. But it's been really good. I think the physicality side of it is probably very similar to League Two and just probably a bit better of a standard on the ball.
Yeah, we've heard Johnny Kenny talking about that himself. Obviously he made the move the other way, obviously playing in League One now with Bolton, talking about it during the week. You've found yourself playing at right back for the majority of the season. You've had a couple of appearances in midfield as well, so I suppose on the face of it, or plainly, which is your preferred position?
I was in right back earlier on in the season. I started off in midfield and we had a few injuries at right back, so the gaffer kind of trusted me in right back. I'd done okay and I've ended up staying there for most of the season, but I'm really enjoying it. I would probably prefer midfield, but as long as I'm in the team and being part of that team this year has been amazing. I just wanted to start as many games as I could.
Yeah, just Oisín on that, you probably played all your football as a centre-back kind of growing up. Like, what's the transition like for you then to go and play in midfield, and how hard was that kind of to get your head around?
It probably started about 2 years ago. I was playing at Walsall and I'd signed for Walsall as a centre-back, and then Matt Sadler got the intern job. And he kind of stuck me in midfield with 4 games to go. I'd done quite well and then started the next season as a midfielder and got a few goals. But it was a big transition for me because I would never have played midfield growing up or anything. It was always centre-back. And I kind of just was learning as I went and done quite well in midfield, got a few goals, got a few assists. And then Hart signed me as a midfielder 2 years later, which I've always kind of bounced from centre-back to midfield, but this season it's been centre back, right back, midfield, right mid. It's just a bit different this year.
Yeah, and I suppose the impact like Derek McInnes has had as well on you and your game. He spoke quite complimentary about you all season as well. Like, what's it been like working with him?
He's been brilliant for me. He's a real man's manager, and he knows how to get you going and knows when to tell you you're not doing good enough. But I feel like me and him have a good trust with each other, as does the rest of the boys. And it's good that he just trusts me in different positions, and I just find it really good working for him.
I spoke to Ross Tierney just as you were making a move last summer, and obviously you played with Ross and you're good pals and I'm kind of grown up as well. And he said you got a move to Hearts and it was a great move. And you kind of you were signed because your pressing stats and your physicality and your running power was something that the people at Hearts had seen and picked out and thought that you'd be a great fit for their team. How is that sold to you, that move to Hearts last summer?
It came about really, really quick, and I had a few interests from teams, but Hearts seemed really serious with the Jamestown model, and supposedly I'd flagged up on this Jamestown model as a midfielder they wanted, and they sold it to me really well. They said I was going to play a big part, and I don't know much how the Jamestown model works, but my stats were really good, so that's how I got signed.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that now that Shelburne are also kind of using as well to sign players.
I wanted to just mention, Oisin, you obviously were involved with that Walsall team last year, and you had a massive lead at one point in the league, in League Two, and it kind of things didn't work out in the end. It's not quite been exactly the same with Hearts. Obviously, you found yourself at the top of the table. Is there anything you can take from that experience that you had last year, ultimately not working out in the end, that you can bring to the table this year for a Hearts team that will have players who maybe haven't experienced this before?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of similarities in terms of, like, you need to keep your head, you need to just keep going game by game. It does sound cliche, but I think at Walsall, at times last year, we were kind of getting too comfortable. And I think we only had to win maybe four or five games in 22. And if we lost, sometimes we weren't kind of that worried. But I feel like there is a lot of boys in that Hearts change room that have been around. Like, you have players that have played in the Premier League. There's a lot of experience. But definitely for me, it's just tick off game by game and just do your best in every game.
Yeah. And what's the buzz like around the city at the minute? Are you picking up any of that yourself, or is it a very close kind of situation, keep to yourself?
I think the buzz has been really good around, obviously, the heart side of the city this year. The fans have been unbelievable. The fans, you'd see them out about and they'd be always complimentary of you. The games are unbelievable to play in at Tynecastle because it's such an enclosed kind of stadium and it's always sold out. It's my favourite stadium to play at in this league. It's just, the atmosphere is unbelievable when we're doing well. So it's been a really good year for me.
Yeah.
Oisin, can I ask you, it's obviously been a season of moments for Hearts, but there was a moment about halfway through the season at Celtic Park where you managed to get a pretty big goal, I think it's safe to say, for Hearts for the course of the season. Just what was maybe that moment like for you, scoring as an Irish player to put Hearts 2-0 up at Celtic Park? And then was there ever really a moment throughout the season where it clicked that we have a right good go at this title?
It's a good question. Like, the scoring the goal at Celtic Park was amazing. It was unbelievable. You've grown up watching these teams and in these stadiums, and you're scoring in them. It was just an amazing feeling. But I think we've had a good belief in the squad, in each other. Like, you're training every day with some of these players, the likes of Claudio Braga, Kizaridis, all these players, and you see the standard in training, and even from the boys that aren't getting into the team, and you think that, like, this team is going to have a proper go at it. But I think it's probably after Christmas. You try to get to Christmas still on top, and we've always kind of had that inner belief.
You spoke about Claudio Braga there, and we spoke briefly about Jamestown before, but obviously, when you have a model like that, you have players who are coming into Hearts from all over Europe and from all different backgrounds. How has that been like to kind of gel into the dressing room when everyone is just coming from completely different backgrounds into the club?
I think it was probably a benefit for me because we had so many new lads. You weren't coming into a team that everybody knew each other. I think in the summer there could have been 9 of us new lads. So we were all staying in the same apartment building. So we travel into training together and stuff like that and get to know each other. But I think the Scottish boys that were here previously, everyone's been so, like, welcoming. And after that first 2 or 3 weeks, we went to Spain and everyone gelled really, really quickly. And it's been really good change room this year.
Am I correct in saying that you played underage club level with both Jack Moylan and Conor Grant?
You're right in that, yeah. I played with Malahide. I was at Belvedere originally and then Malahide.
How was that experience like playing with them? And then you would have been playing, I suppose, underage internationals for Ireland with them as well. Did you have any sort of sense at that age group that you all could go on to achieve such great things?
I think I would probably say yeah, because at that age group, like, I started off at Belvedere with the likes of Ross Tierney, Troy Parrott, Sean Brennan, and all these players were going over to England on trials. I was going to England on trials. We all knew that we were good enough to go over to England. And then I went on to Malahide, and Connor and Jack were both unbelievable at that age group. And you still see that in their play at the minute. And Jack's after getting promoted, it's unbelievable for him. But you probably don't know how far you're going to go, but you could definitely sense that Dublin league, there was a lot of very good players. Yeah. In my age group, you had Nathan Collins playing for Cherry Orchard, Cameron Ledridge with St. Kevin's. You had a lot of top players.
Obviously, you know, we saw Jack last week get promoted to the Championship, and he's one who's kind of maybe been earmarked for the Ireland camp in May against Granada. Have you thought about maybe an international future at senior level Ireland? Is that something that has entered your head since you've passed the underage levels with Ireland?
Yeah, I think it's always been a goal in the back of my head. I didn't think probably I was going to be in with a chance when I was playing League Two, but this year I feel like I've done quite well, but I'm kind of just focusing on Hearts. So I'm in this position now, and I'm blessed to be in this position coming into the last five games. So it's definitely a goal of mine, but it's not up to me. I'm just trying to control what I can control over here.
It's probably worth going back to the very start where it all began. I mean, for people who aren't too familiar with yourself, I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this probably are, but you were a decent Gaelic football player right here back in your days, back in Cavan.
Yeah, I would have played a lot. I would have probably played more Gaelic than football.
Right.
I would have only played football to keep me kind of fit in the winter for Gaelic. And I got a trial at Man United very young. I was 11. It was my first week of secondary school, and that kind of changed everything. I was playing for my local team, Carrick Rovers, and then scouts started coming to Carrick, and then they were telling my parents I needed to go up to Dublin to a better standard and stuff like that. So yeah, it was it kind of got serious from that age.
That's amazing, 11 years old, yeah, and you do hear that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I remember I was in school a couple of years ahead of Oisín, and everyone was like, who's this young lad is coming into the school next week, and he's just had a trial at Man United, and he's playing against David Beckham's son, Brooklyn Beckham. So yeah, like, there was obviously...
That must have ruined your ambitions as a footballer, if this young fella's coming in, and he's already streets ahead of you.
I was already retiring at that stage, to be honest. But yeah, no, it was mad, and I remember actually the time you signed for Newcastle as well, Oisín, back, I think you were 16, you signed back then as well. Like, just on that, like, to leave your family, to leave your friends and stuff at home, and I know some of your mates back home as well, like, how tough was that as well for you to kind of leave all that and leave your family as well and move to somewhere like Newcastle and kind of pursue this dream of being a professional footballer?
I think it was definitely very tough those first few years, because it's kind of the age that people are starting, your friends from home are starting to go out, they're starting to like choose their subjects for leaving, so trying to think of what they're going to do, and then you end up going over and you're missing out on all the fun. But I was quite lucky in terms of, like, Dave, you'd know my friends back home are still my best friends, and I kind of kept in contact, where I seen a few people kind of stray away from their friends back home when they moved over, but I was lucky that I had a good support network and that kind of got me through it. But it's definitely tough at that age, because it's changed now for Irish lads, isn't it? You can't go over till you're 18.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was going over and back to England, I'd say 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. I'd go to school for 2 weeks, be away for 2 weeks. That was from second year, third year, fourth year. So yeah. I was kind of used to being away, but it was definitely tough. You miss your family and your friends.
Yeah, of course. And being from Sherrick, Oisín, you know yourself that they'll all keep you grounded over there as well. And
oh, they definitely will.
Yeah. And like, as well, it is important, like, your parents have been such a kind of support base as well for you as well. They've kind of, you know, like, it's been hard on them as well to have their youngest son go across to England as well. So it is difficult for everybody involved. And to get to this stage is pretty incredible as well. But I suppose what comes next is the next five games for you at Hearts, and this opportunity to win a league title for the first time since 1960. Is this possibly the most exciting time there's ever been at this club for a very, very long time, I suppose?
Yeah, I think you said it. I'm guessing so. It's been so good around the club, and people let you know about it and say how good, like, the fans will, if they see you, they'll tell you how good it's been as a year, and just to enjoy it. And it would be amazing if we won it, and I think we're in a good spot at the minute with five games to go, 1 point ahead, but there's still a lot of football to be played. Everyone's going to be playing each other in 6-pointer games, so you just have to, it's basically a mini league, which is what the split was probably designed for, but it hasn't really fell that way in a lot of years. But every team in the split can beat each other.
What's it like playing in the derbies or in Ibrox and Celtic Park? The games just seem super fast paced, super intense. Like, you don't get a minute to breathe.
Yeah, it's crazy now. I wasn't expecting it to be that that crazy in my first derby. We played at Tynecastle, and the ball doesn't settle for the first half. You're just running around and it's just mayhem. But the good thing in the Edinburgh derby is they give each other the full stand. So Hearts will give Hibs the full stand, and then when we go to Easter Road, Hibs will give Hearts the full stand. It makes the atmosphere so much better because you have around 4,000, 5,000 fans, and it's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, looking forward to it this Sunday, 4:30, Hibs and Hearts, Easter Road. Oisin, you'll be playing, and thanks very much for joining us. And best luck with everything this season. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much, lads, for having me.
Nice one. Cheers, Oisin. Yeah. So great to hear from Oisin there. Of course, fascinating. It's always great to get some insight from some professional footballers, isn't it?
Yeah, like it is, and it's some story, like, and it's mad, like, how all these like lads are connected. Like you just mentioned there, Ben, about like he played with Jack Moylan and Carl Grant, and played in the same team as Troy Parra. Like, could you imagine waking up on a Saturday morning and you're like, right, who are we playing today? Oh, we're playing against Troy Parra, Oisin McEntee. We're playing against Jack Moylan, Carl Grant, and now that those years are gone now because of the way the underage League of Ireland squads are. So. Maybe it's a better thing because it's more regionalised, but like that used to be, and when I was growing up as well, the whole thing was you played for your club, you played for like your representative team in your league, and then you go and play in the DDSL. And the DDSL was just like elite Premier Division.
It's unbelievable.
And
standard was ridiculous.
Yeah, and like you couldn't breathe. Like I never played in the DDSL, but we played against them a few times growing up. Like, and I remember one time playing against Jack Byrne, and just your head spinning. You're like, how I can't even. This isn't. They're playing a different sport to us. So it's just fascinating, and it's great to see like them lads are doing well, and those lads maybe took a bit of time after their after they'd first kind of graduated from like senior football, and they took maybe a couple of years to get in and kind of find their feet. And it's great. We've such a representation of Irish footballers abroad. It's brilliant.
And it's good. That's actually an unbelievably, I would suggest, unintentional segue back into what's been going on in the world of Irish football. And we'll be definitely keeping an eye on how the season ends with Hearts, and I'm sure we'll have Oisin on again hopefully when they're lifting the title. I think everyone, the neutral, is fairly behind Hearts, just to freshen things up a little bit.
Well, it's supposed to be going Ireland, really, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, I know. Unless you're a Celtic fan, I suppose. If you're a Celtic fan, fair enough, I get that. But like, I think just as far as like, what's it, 1985, is it, 86?
1960, they have won a title.
No, but sorry, I'm talking about the refreshing side of it.
Sure, Alex.
Like, I think it's something interesting that we could get into, because like, one of my best mates is a big Celtic fan. He's like,
I could not think of anything
worse than Hearts or Rangers winning the title. I am buzzing if Hearts win the title. Loved to see them win the title. What an opportunity it is. And like, it's just better for the game of football, like for Scottish football in general.
It's the same as looking at it's a similar idea to people being excited at the prospect of Spurs getting relegated, because it's like, this is why we can't have a closed shop with anything, because it shows the football is a game that's played on the pitch, and it needs to be kept that way as much as we physically can, even though money is becoming more and more of an impact.
But like that's Scottish Premier SPFL hasn't been won by anyone else since the 80s. Like, Spurs haven't relegated since the 70s. So you're going back in a lifetime here before these things happen. That's why we're so excited at the possibility of them happening. Like, these things don't happen. Not even all too often. They just don't happen.
No, they don't happen at all. Yeah, no. Andrew Omabedele.
Yeah.
That's where we want to go now.
A player that actually played alongside Oisin in those underage teams as well.
Yeah. Would have played with Nathan Collins as well before Collins moved down. Yeah, before Collins. I can remember playing. I played that before. Oisin was my age group. I was long gone from that standard by the time the 16s came around when Oisin came down to Dublin. But I can remember playing against Andrew Omabedele years ago, and I don't not because remembering that he's Andrew Omabedele, he wasn't Andrew Omabedele then. I just remember playing against that team because people knew Nathan Collins, because Nathan Collins' family were all involved in football. It's mad to think, like, you know, if you think as well, players you would have played against, like you're talking about Jack Byrne there, imagine if it's players that were all in these DDSL groups and they've gone. Like, they're only ones that we know of that have happened. You know what I mean? There's players that wouldn't play in these DDSL leagues that you know, or even where there's players who were playing NDSL who've gone on to play.
Outside that as well. But it's a good thing now that it's kind of been more spread across the country. But for Andrew Omabedele, tomorrow night, French Cup semi-final last week.
Before we get to, like, that game last week, oh my God, the videos, everything that's come out off the back of that has made, like, Strasbourg are this weird sort of entity now, or not always this weird sort of entity, but have unintentionally kind of through no fault of their own for their fans, become this kind of subsidiary to Chelsea. But my God, talk about an atmosphere. For a bit of context, they were 2-0 down after their first leg away against Mainz. Mainz. And then they welcomed Mainz over to Strasbourg last Thursday. And my God, talk about a cauldron. They won that game 4-0.
And had a goal disallowed or something.
Had a goal disallowed, like unbelievable stuff. And some of the talent on this team outside of Andrew himself, who we know what he's capable of. And I've said for quite some time, I think he's all the tools to be our best defender. I think if he can just sort out the injury stuff, which he seems to have a hold on at the minute, touch wood, things are going pretty well for him over there. And I think it's only a matter of time before he's back in the fold. I mean, we had him on, I was chatting to him a couple of months ago, and you can see the drive. He's a very cool, composed character. Like he looks the part and he acts the part too, but over the last couple of months he has anyway.
I think like when I first seen him come on for Ireland, and me and my dad were chatting about it, and he used the word Rolls Royce defender. I think if he kind of reaches potential in the ceiling that he has, he does look like a Rolls Royce defender. And hopefully this move to France and French football is the thing that kind of keeps him fit and keeps him playing 90 minutes week in, week out at a really good level.
Really good level.
And I know you've watched a lot of him, Ben, and like, this fella is definitely going to be an integral part of this Ireland squad over the next couple of years. And it's just a bit kind of crazy that we have so many centre backs that he wasn't in the squad for the game against Czechia.
Mad, isn't it? Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I would have kept a very close eye on him when he went over to England and he was at Norwich. I would have watched quite a lot of him.
Yeah.
And I was amazed it took so long to get that move. And then when it came to Nottingham Forest and he wasn't playing every week, I was just shocked again, because I know the talent that this guy has is absolutely ridiculous. Like he has, and as you said, he's all the capabilities. If just things click right, and that is so much being a professional footballer, is having that luck to just kind of fly your way. And it seems like, hopefully touch wood, it has been going his way the last couple of weeks at Strasbourg, and he has been getting run in form. Because when you I don't know if we have a centre half who has his the same capabilities that he has, like that profile of defender. I don't actually know if we have someone.
No, I don't think so.
Like that.
No.
I think he's so different from the mold of all the centre halves that we usually have. And I think if we're playing a back three and he's either side of that centre half, I think this, like,
it could take our game up to a whole.
It's
other
not hyperbole to say that this guy could, like, is going to be in the Ireland starting 11 for the next 10 years if he does, if injuries kind of go his way, you know.
I just think interesting as well. Like, he's very cool and calm, collecting on the ball.
He's one of these kind of like, cool, calm, collecting on the ball.
Yeah.
Even his personality, sorry to cut you off, is like this modern Irish athlete that we're seeing more of now. That is kind of like, oh, I'm Irish, I can't go. And, you know, back in the day, it would have been a case of we would see ourselves.
Complex.
Yes, it's a bit more chest out, isn't it?
It is, and he encapsulates that to a T, I think, anyway, from what I've seen of him.
I think he's definitely a player that, you know, we're all about, with Nathan Collins playing midfield. And I don't think we're going to need that now. And maybe, hopefully, Boston Lowell maybe develops into the player that we want him to develop into. But I'm a Bamadelic. He's well able to step into midfield and play a couple of nice passes too.
Yeah, that's interesting. We were having the debate in here last night about Nick O'Reilly. And Dion Fanning compared him to Frank Rijkaard. And I think Mbappe is that kind of similar mold of defender where if you saw him if you saw him with the ball in the centre of the park, you wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
If you saw him with the ball up in the right wing, you wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
Like it's that role, that maybe that right hand side or left hand side of that back three for Ireland. I'd love to see him play around and get the ball at his feet and be able to maraud forward with the ball.
Yeah.
Like the likes of the way like Rijkaard would have done playing in the centre half for the Netherlands, or if you play club level, I think he's perfect for that.
Remember
mold.
The screamer, was he nearly scored against the Mbappadelli?
Yeah,
nearly scored against
Serbia.
Yeah, like
just
whistled past the post, and that would have been. Yeah, when he got into the team, like he just developed so quickly under Stephen Kenny, and it looked like an integral part. But just the injuries have been a nightmare, and that's what happens. And Oisin would kind of briefly touched on it there as well, like, you know, injuries and getting injured at the wrong time.
Yeah, for sure.
Just
that's
stunts
what it is.
Your development. But
it's all about timing.
It's really interesting for him. He's playing, like, you can have your hang-ups about Blueco, about the owners of Strasbourg, but the thing is, for Strasbourg, the club themselves, they'll always have that problem with Chelsea, but they have such an opportunity with the calibre and the players that they have.
The talent is outrageous.
Like Emmanuel Omega. Unbelievable.
A footballer. I know he'd actually, I think he had a bit of a falling out or something along those lines with Lehmer Sr.
Yeah.
So and he's due to go to Chelsea, isn't he? There's some sort of agreement. Chelsea, so yeah. I think he'll be hoping Lemar Senior's on the next flight back to Strasbourg. But Gary O'Neill's doing a good job there.
Well, he is doing a good job.
Ah, he is doing a good job. Yeah,
because he has the quality player there where you're.
But how often have we seen managers go in and manage high quality players and make an absolute hames of it? He's doing all right for the time being.
Lemar Senior, like, he just was in a position. I'm not suggesting
that Gary O'Neill should go and be the next Chelsea manager. I'm just saying that he's doing a good job, and there would be no reason to get rid of him at this current moment.
As John Bruin said, you're being upgraded from the Strasbourg office. I don't think that's going to happen. There's a lad playing
that might be playing the World Cup this year, Valentin Barco, who's obviously with Brighton, but he's playing developing the central midfielder at Strasbourg, and he looks like he could be.
I always keep an eye out as well for Marshall Godo, who's playing on the wing for Strasbourg. He was brilliant for them the other night, and he was on loan at Wigan a couple of years ago and was exceptional.
Where'd it all go wrong for me? Wigan to Strasbourg.
Wigan to Strasbourg, yeah. But loads of big games coming up for Andrew Mbamadele over the next couple of... The next week, really. They play Nice at home in the French Cup semi-final.
That Rayo Vallecano very quickly as well.
Yeah.
Have you seen the price of tickets for Rayo Vallecano? They put them up. Rayo Vallecano is amazing. You can only buy tickets at stadium.
Yeah,
you can't buy tickets online.
Yeah.
But they've put up the price of tickets by €20 for the semi-final, and there's absolute uproar.
Yeah, because it's quite a left-wing socialist club.
Yeah.
And it's in the part of Madrid that's like where a lot of
under the Franco era, it would have been
a lot of immigrants from like Colombia and Venezuela would end up in this part of Madrid, and it's like a really cool club. I'd love to go and see Rayo Vallecano play, but it's an unbelievable opportunity for them. But €20, like their tickets are pretty cheap, I think. It's
the principle of it, though, isn't it?
Yeah, like, you should stick to your values.
The tickets are the same price now. Oh, we're in the semi final now. £20 people will buy them.
But they're very much like anti-apartheid, anti. Yeah, kind of promoting the good things about sport.
Well, all of that being said, I'm hoping Strasbourg go out and absolutely hammer them in the finals. So there's something to keep an eye on for you there, and hopefully we see Mbamadele back in the fold with the Republic of Ireland over the next little while. There's a load of other stuff going on. We won't have time to get around to it all, of course, but I do want to go and switch to the managerial front for a couple of moments. We had a big weekend for Brian Barry Murphy, who got his Cardiff side promoted at the first time of asking, his first season with them, back to the Championship, where they should be, considering the squad they have and all the other bits around it and the size of the club. But nonetheless, an amazing achievement, and we've seen how many teams get stuck down there in the doldrums of the EFL, and Cardiff won't be one of those this time around. We also had a mixed weekend, a bad weekend, I would say, for Robbie Keane over in Hungary.
Yeah.
Ferencvaros boss, they were beaten. And now they're 3 points off the leaders.
Yuri.
So I was going to let you do that one. With 3 games to play. So, to try and encapsulate both of them in here together, they both actually have a similar age, believe it or not. Brian Barry Murphy's in his late 40s, Robbie Keane's in his mid 40s. Who do you think is more likely to manage the Republic of Ireland at one point in their career?
I'll just go off the bat here and say Brian Barry Murphy looks a fantastic technical coach, and there's been a lot of eyes on him since he was, you know, at Manchester City Development Academy, Development Squad. But purely for the name of Robbie Keane's name is Robbie Keane,
yeah.
And he scored so many goals for Ireland. I think if he keeps on a decent trajectory as a manager, it's a lot more likely, I would think, that you're going to see him instead of Brian Barry Murphy, especially.
I think the opposite. I think Brian Barry Murphy is more likely to be a coach of the Republic of Ireland. A couple of reasons, but Brian Barry Murphy has like developed this pretty kind of substantial coaching career. Like, he's worked his way up from being a player, I suppose, in the lower leagues in England. Had cotton on to the idea of he wants to be a coach quite early, as you know, in his career as well. Had done his coaching badges, has worked in it a couple of different roles as well. Obviously, he worked at Rochdale and did pretty good job at Rochdale.
All things considered,
All things considered, and he actually used the Irish market quite interestingly as well to sign players. And then he went to Man City, and he was like kind of working with Enzo Maresca and working with Pep Guardiola and working with their loan players and their loan system, and then working with the multi-club system. And then he was at Leicester with Ruud van Nistelrooy and working as a coach there and learning from someone like, you know, the Dutch school as well.
He was clever enough not to take that job.
clever enough not to take the Leicester job as well. And then he was kind of thinking, you know, where is his next move? And I know there was links to maybe taking a job in Japan.
Yeah, it was huge. A big talk around that.
Yeah, and taking a job somewhere on the continent. And obviously you've got family and different things. It's quite hard. But the job at Cardiff City is like a really attractive one. Decent budget. Some really good young Welsh players in that academy.
This is the thing, just on that, like they actually haven't had that budget in terms of going to sign players over the last little while because of the kind of half transfer embargo type thing they'd been under. But he's said multiple times now what lured him into taking that job was the sheer talent that they have at the underage levels. Mm-hmm. Players that he would have seen when he was with Manchester City when they were maybe 14 or 15 at the time that are now 17, 18, maybe have a year under their belts in the EFL, have a year under their belts in the Championship, have been through some struggles and some positives as well while before he'd come in. So that was one of the reasons he decided to do it. Now, that being said, it's not some kind of fairy tale story that they've done this. They do have some players there that are probably still on a big wage, have been signed for a lot of money, but that's a difficult job in itself, going to manage these guys who maybe see themselves as slightly above above League One and getting into their heads, no, look, we're in this together, we need to buy in, you can help these young lads come up. And Craig Bellamy as well has mentioned gone on record to say how much he feels as though Brian Barry Murphy managing Cardiff has directly helped the Welsh national team,
which is really interesting as well. And yeah, the thing about like he kind of had a particular style of football at Rochdale, and he spoke about it on here on the shows here about how he's kind of developed that and then maybe became a bit more pragmatic. And now he's playing, you know, a pretty good level of football, and he's going back to the Championship. He has like a huge kind of CV, let's say, behind him. And if you compare that to Robbie Keane is in the jobs that he got, the jobs that he got because of his playing career.
That's why I think he's more likely to get the Ireland job because of his playing career.
I'm not
doubting the qualities and technical abilities of the coaches versus coach. Yeah. I'm purely arguing from a standpoint of an international job, who is more likely to get given that.
Yeah.
And I think like it's the same way I'd probably back Damien Duff to get the job over Brian Barry Murphy because of the pedigree behind the name of Robbie Keane or Damien Duff. That's the best reason. If you were asked who seems to be a more technical, who's better abilities as a technical coach right now, it's pretty safe to assume it's Brian Barry Murphy from what we've seen.
It's hard to know. I know that's my kind of argument on it, but the thing is, like, Robbie Keane's done a great job with Ferenc Varos, but in a league where there's kind of one team, and it looks like they mightn't win the league this year. Look, they can still come back. Obviously, Gyuri can drop points and they might still win that league anyway, but they haven't. No other team has won that league since 2018 in Hungary. He won a league title in Israel, and the fact is that he went to Israel, and that is going to stick in the craw of a lot of Ireland supporters for a very, very long time, and people won't forget it. That will probably rule him out of ever getting the Celtic job, because the Celtic job is going to come up. I don't think he'll ever get the Celtic job because he went to Israel. That's okay. I think that's the biggest reason why he won't be the Ireland.
Do you think that would affect him getting the Irish job?
We've seen the videos of that, like, kind of like Kneecap and Daniel Lambert and Bowes and different kind of groups have shared about Ireland's potential games with Israel in the autumn Nations League.
I understand where you're coming from, and I don't disagree with the sentiment. And I don't know, if you were to ask me a personal question, do I think that someone who went and worked in Israel willingly should, you know, get a job in Ireland, I'd have different views. But my point is, does that come into the mindset of the people who will be appointing him? I don't know if it does.
Yeah. Well, just on that now, he did go to Israel before October 7th happened. He stayed for what he said was to see out the league with the players that he had, and he left when the season was over. So that's what he would say on that. He's done a pretty good job in Europe with Ferenc Varos. They got to Europa League,
big fish in a small pond,
final in that as well. No. Like, I think his next move is to the Premier League,
or the Championship.
I think he fancies.
I don't know if he'd want to go to the Championship, would he? And I think that kind of shit. Unless the Wolves job comes up, I don't think that job comes up. I think
I don't think it does either. But I'm not sure there's any job in the Premier League.
There was a lot of talk about Palace.
I think the Palace job's going to come up at the end of the season. Daniel Farke's on a brilliant job. I think the Leeds job could come up if there's a bit of discontent there.
Will Farke go?
I don't know if Farke go, but I still don't know how.
So you think one of his old clubs, like I don't see Farke leaving Leeds.
Unless he goes to Palace or something. But Farke start the next season and they could lose their first six games. That's very possible, and then he's out the door. Like
the argument's
on
now.
We could go on and on about these Irish managers. There is, of course, a lot of other stuff going on. But just on my final point, kind of on the Brian Barry Murphy thing, I actually think he's going to carve himself out an exceptionally impressive club managerial career. And then maybe this is something that we talk about in genuinely 20 years' time, when Brian Martin Murphy's in his 60s, has possibly taken over as the Ireland manager. I think I could be wrong. I could well be wrong.
Double
X. And that's not necessarily to say he's past it, but it's just a change of...
It's also who's the son of. He's the son of Jimmy Barry Murphy, yes. The greatest GA people of all time.
And the people to be serious buy-in.
Oh, 100%. Buy-in. And he's a Cork man. So.
And he still sounds like he lives in Cork.
Cork, so you have the whole of Cork wine. That's all you need. That.
Yeah, Red Storm rising. We've got loads of other stuff going on. A bit of a weird story that came out last night at the time of recording about Owen Elding. Missing out on his citizenship ceremony because he said himself the protests were going on, roads were closed, and he couldn't make it. It got postponed, actually, I think, and it's going to be in the summer now, so he's not going to be available for selection in the camp for Murcia against Granada, which tickets went on sale for last night, so let us know if you're going. And
I don't think perhaps that was, he wouldn't have been involved in that anyway. I don't think so. The Scottish season still would have been going on. Because they're outside of FIFA window, the clubs aren't like liable to release players. Clubs can call on them if they want.
Yeah, but I do think there's going to be a lot of clubs that are going to.
I do think they will.
Like, I don't think
Hibs would have, though.
Fair enough. That's probably another conversation, but he would have been available for selection. He's not going to be available now. Yeah. I mean, we could have asked Hibs if he had gotten his thing. Do you want to come?
There's nothing we can do about it, though, unfortunately. Yeah. It's just it's funny. I did see that citizenship get pushed back at the time, and I didn't put two and two together at all. Mm. I just thought, surely there's a way they can just get this done. But
yeah, you would think so. Maybe that's just us looking at this footballing world, and maybe it's a little bit more normal than we give it credit for. But lots of other players doing some interesting stuff. We didn't manage to touch on Joe Hodge last week. Myself and David, we got carried away talking about some other stuff that was obviously far more important. Mm-hmm. Johnny Kenny's flying it with Bolton now. They've got chance and all for him. The fans want him to be signed. We can go into detail next week, because the squad's going to be announced in 2 weeks' time, about exactly who we want to see in that kind of squad that's going to look very different, and there'll be a lot of people raising eyebrows as to who is this guy. People have never heard of. Obviously, ideally, we will have heard of him and we can tell you all about him. But what type of squad are you hoping to see here? How much youth do you want to see? How much kind of experimentation? It's obviously going to be totally experimentation, but you know what I mean? Like players that maybe aren't that young but haven't been in the fold before or maybe available.
Yeah, I'm hoping for maybe a bit more of that rather than just call up under 21s and under 19s, which I think people might clamour to do that because that's just the nature of it. You always want to see who's next up. I'd like to see fellas maybe haven't got a run in the likes of Aaron Cashin and those boys who maybe are a little bit older now and haven't got a look in at senior level football. You're going to have a mix of fellas who have a couple, like Connor Coventry, who've had a few caps maybe and will get more of a look in at senior level. I'd like to see it a blend. It's going to be majority English based players, so I'd like to see it a blend of fellas who maybe have a handful of caps. You're going to have players who are vastly experienced, you're just the nature of the beast, you're going to have a couple of them, and then players who are uncapped but maybe are, you know, from 24 up, who haven't got a chance.
They're
to
ones
run
I'd
for
be intrigued by.
Yeah,
I'd be intrigued with them ones.
What's the story with the League of Ireland players?
Dustin Boy is about to go, isn't he?
Yeah, so
it's called.
Again, it's outside of international window, so the clubs aren't required to release the players. Hamer Hal Grimson has said he doesn't know how hard he's going to push for them because he doesn't want to basically, you know, cause a bit of rifts between the managers.
Surprised if Stephen Bradley let the Rovers players go.
I think that was the gist behind it, is he didn't want to kind of another flare up of that. But Alan Reynolds came out last week. He was asked about Dustin Boy and he said he wouldn't stand in his way. So it's going to be purely up to the League of Ireland clubs if they are willing to release the players from international duty or not, basically.
I think like it's just such an opportunity. Like we've heard today in this episode, like Irish people are very keen to play for the country no matter when, where or how.
Yes.
So I think stopping the likes of, you turn around to Adam Brennan or Dustin Devoy or whoever it is and be like, oh, we need you for this Shamrock Rovers or Bohemians game.
Yeah. You're not going to be in the go books.
Yeah, like you got to, you know, this is an opportunity to get into an international squad, international camp. So
yeah, and now look, those managers would look at the other side of that and say, you know, we're a club side playing these players, and you're like Shamrock Rovers, we're going to try and win another title, and you're pulling players out of an international window. That's exactly what they'd say. But I look wholeheartedly, like if I'm a player and I have a chance to play for Ireland, I'm doing whatever I can to play for Ireland.
We'll dive more into that next week. in far more detail, and we'll give you some names that we think might, or we'd like to see involved. We're going to bring a little bit of a new section into the Green Scene from now on, so we want you guys to be involved. We're going to be talking about your comments, about your emails. You can get in touch at greenscene@offtheball.com. That's greenscene@offtheball.com. You can get into the YouTube comments. You can get into the TikTok comments of any of our clips, the Instagram comments on Twitter, on Facebook, whatever you like, wherever you're listening to this right now, get in touch with us. We've got one comment from last week we're going to go through now, and we can maybe put a bit more structure on it, bring it some earlier in the show next week. Let us know what you want to see from it. But last week we spoke about the idea of the dual nationality thing and players declaring for Ireland at different stages of their career. We got a comment in from Irish Joe Shelton, who said that Does opportunity and status not come into this conversation? Unfortunately for us, the two players in question, which at the time I think were Declan Rice and Jack Grealish, quickly became superstars, and their status and earning power could only be maximised by playing for England. I just thought that was an interesting, well thought out comment from Irish Joe Shelton.
Yeah. So,
what do you think of that?
Yeah, like
is there truth behind if you play for England you earn more money?
I think there is. Yeah, well, there is. Yeah.
Well, you definitely command a bigger transfer.
And if you come from an English club, there's clauses in your contract where if you play for England, you get paid more money.
What about Gareth Bale?
Well, Bale's a different. So Bale's not a right. He came from the standard of Bale's football. Like Bale's a one-off, really, in this scenario. Bale is an absolute world-class level footballer. He's a complete one-off.
Yeah.
Obviously, look, Declan Rice has gone on to be a world-class footballer. We will never know what Declan Rice would have made or how much money he would have commanded as a transfer fee if he went. I do think Bale's one-off.
He gets the move to Arsenal.
Definitely would have got the move. It might not have cost him.
Does he get the move to Arsenal?
Yeah,
no, he 100% gets the move, but I don't know if he costs him 100 million.
Yeah,
I don't think he would.
I think he costs 50 million if he's... Yeah.
If he's might have come a year later.
Yeah, you know. I understand the point of your putting up your claim. And look, and I agree in what we said last week, and that nationality is a complex topic. And if you're not, you know, really swayed to one side or the other, now I think it's pretty safe to say we have seen from Declan Rice since he's fairly swayed towards England.
Yeah, he is.
When you see him line up,
celebrate against Ireland, obviously, great man, Dec.
Yeah.
Did that rile you up more?
Yeah.
Like the
non-celebration celebration.
100%. Oh my God, my head was on Mars.
My head was on Mars. Yeah. Own it.
Yeah.
But I, the point, I just, my thoughts on it, I think the point, like the facts of the comment are correct in that I think all of those things are true. Whether it comes into the psyche of a player when they're making the decision, I don't know. I'd say it would more come into the psyche of maybe someone who's advising the player on how to get the most out of his career.
Yeah.
That would be my
like the agents and stuff play into that as
That's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Poisonous bunch. Well, I'll go for one more comment here.
Go for one more. Yeah.
Riddler NI says, it's a tough one for us NI Northern Ireland fans.
I had that one
too.
Highlighted myself.
Yeah, it's really hard to take when young guys come up through your international ranks, have time, effort and money invested in them. Fellas who use that international recognition to further their careers across the water, and then they declare for ROI, Republic of Ireland. That's hard to take.
Yeah.
I get it. But the issue...
You've experienced that as well.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't solely...
But see, I think that his comment comes from that exact point in that we were talking about that. Yeah. He said, that happens to us as well.
It happens to everyone. You
know? And it does happen to everyone. Beast. Yeah, it is true. Yeah. I, do you know what? I actually have no issue with that comment. I think it's fair enough.
Yeah, but the issue of nationality and where you feel like you're from is completely different in the north than probably anywhere not anywhere in the world, but like, you know, most of the world, it's such a complex thing. You see, like, I think just the most obvious example I can think of is Christopher Atherton, obviously, has gone and declared for
Rory McIlroy is the most obvious.
Rory
McIlroy, want to be careful now, yeah.
Yeah, that's a different podcast. Mm. But, you know, like, he went and played up in the north because that's, you know, logistically it was easier for him to go and play, but he always felt he wanted to play for the Republic, and then he came to a decision and he made it. So I think that is fair enough. Like, it just, you know, it's just hard in Northern Ireland because it doesn't really go the other way. There's not people in the south born here where they go and play for Northern Ireland. That's just kind of what happens. So yeah, it is interesting. But you also got, like, you know,
it's a good question actually. Sorry, like, can you think of a player who was born in the 26 that has played for Northern Ireland?
I don't know. Well, Jimmy Dunn, I know, was asked about it and
was
courted by Michael O'Neill back when he was actually playing for Hearts, I think, back then. So
where was I know Owen Kenny hasn't.
Owen Kenny's born in Derry.
He's born in Derry.
Yeah.
So that's yeah.
Yeah.
I actually don't know if he was born in Derry Hospital, but I actually don't know.
But he would have.
I think he grew up in Donegal.
Yeah.
But he was born in Derry.
That's even more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's even more complex.
And like, yeah, people are using, you know, some players would just see like international caps. That's going to progress me on to my next move. You know, if I want to get out of this academy,
if I'm underage, exactly, and an under 18 cap for whatever nation it is going to boost me in some way, shape, or form. Like, that can be a thought. Yeah. And again, it can be a thought for those that who are advising these players as well. But that is pretty much all we have time for. There's loads going on. Any final thoughts you want to throw my way before?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, speaking of Derry, I'll be up at Celtic Park on Friday night.
I'll also be there.
Are you going, are you?
I'm going, yeah.
We are on a stag
in Derry this weekend.
Oh, unbelievable.
And, that is super I'm fascinated to see what this looks like. Yeah.
You couldn't have timed that
better. No, you couldn't have timed it better.
Is there room for a plus one? Is there? Plus two?
There's a couple of hotel rooms going here at the minute. So
I'll be there. I'll be there anyway. So let's, you know.
We just have to get a few tickets, but Derry in
but it's first come first served. That's if anyone wants to go to Celtic Park. Yeah, it's first come first served.
No way.
So season ticket. I was reading the thing. Season ticket holders is you will have ticket, but it's like where you are is just like rock up.
That's amazing.
There's no reserved seats, nothing. No in the stand. It's just you rock up.
You buy a ticket at the ground.
Yeah,
that is class.
That's what it used to be. When I was growing up going to League of Ireland games, I remember, I won't name the club, there used to be a little hut outside that you used to buy your tickets at. You kind of miss those days, like, you know. You'd be deciding on a Friday afternoon if you're going to rock up or not. But yeah, so pretty momentous occasion. Mm-hmm. Derry City playing a couple of literally like just right down the road in Celtic Park.
And if anyone turned on Derry and Antrim in the championship at the weekend, look at the state of the pitch. And James McLean might have a few issues with this pitch on Friday because it's, let's say, not designed for football and not designed for getting the ball on the ground. But interesting. LOI pod tomorrow, Stephen Doyle,
into all of that.
Gareth McGlynn and Vinnie Perth in your podcast feed around 5 o'clock tomorrow.
And we will definitely revisit that next week. I'm fascinated to see how that turns out. I'm sure it'll be a great occasion. But as always, the Green Scene on Off the Ball is with Cadbury, proud sponsors of the Republic of Ireland national teams. We will talk to you next week.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.